This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Kicking off a defying week in his push for a border wall, U.S. President Trump heads to Texas in a bid to reframe the wall debate. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani.
Building the wall was the president's signature campaign pledge, and he's looking to convince supporters he will keep pushing to build it. But the government shutdown weakened the president, and with another shutdown deadline Friday, he's going to El Paso this evening in a move to turn the debate back in his favor. The president will speak a few hundred yards from a border fence he says has made El Paso much safer, though he's exaggerated by just how much. Meantime, talks to avoid another shutdown broke down over the weekend, following days of optimism, but negotiators will meet again today. Sagar Magani at the White House.
Acting U.S. Secretary of Defense Patrick Shanahan said he has not received orders from President Trump to withdraw troops from Afghanistan. Last week, during the State of the Union address, Mr. Trump once again slammed prolonged conflicts with Syria to Afghanistan, saying that great nations do not fight endless wars. He told the crowd that as American diplomats made progress in Afghan peace negotiations, that we will be able to reduce our troop presence and focus on counterterrorism. Acting Defense Secretary Pat Shanahan again said the Islamic State terrorist group remains a global presence. He spoke as U.S.-backed fighters worked to clear the last enclave the militants hold in eastern Syria. He said although the IS presence in Syria has been decimated, local Syrian security forces are needed to ensure stability.
Shouldn't it be a surprise to anyone that if something hasn't been completely eradicated, the risk of it returning remains.
And last week, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo sought to reassure allies the United States would not abandon efforts there. This is VOA News. The United States is continuing the investigation of the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. That's according to Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, asserting that America is not covering up for a murder. Speaking for the U.S. Embassy in Budapest, Hungary, Pompeo said that Washington will continue to take more action in response to the tragic murder of Khashoggi, despite having missed a February 8th deadline set by Congress to determine who was responsible for the killing inside the Saudi consulate in Istanbul in October. Khashoggi was a Washington Post columnist who wrote critically about Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. His remains have still not been found. After denying for several weeks that Khashoggi had been killed in the Saudi consulate, Saudi Arabia later admitted the journalist had in fact been killed by what it called rogue Saudi agents, and it indicted 11 people in his death. The New York Times reported last week that the Saudi Crown Prince said in 2017 that he would use a bullet on Khashoggi if the journalist did not return home and stop writing critically about the Saudi government. Saudi Minister of State Foreign Affairs declined to comment on the Times story last Friday, but told reporters in Washington that the Crown Prince did not order Khashoggi's killing. More than 50 tons of U.S. and Colombian humanitarian aid for Venezuela is still sitting in Colombia with no clear path on how to get the food and medicine into the country. That's because disputed Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has ordered soldiers to prevent the aid from crossing the border. Maduro has said that the U.S. help is in part of a plot to overthrow his government. VOA correspondent Christina Casido-Smith reports.
U.S. Ambassador to Colombia Kevin Whitaker welcomed the food supplies, emphasizing the United States had helped Venezuelans with more than $140 million. He says more help is expected.
This is a down payment. This is just a beginning. It's important. It's significant. It will be distributed to Venezuelans in Venezuela.
Ambassador Whitaker also thanked Colombian President Iván Duque for the transportation of this first lot of help into the Venezuelan border.
That is VOA correspondent Christina Casado-Smith's reporting. A new U.S. Congresswoman who is a Somali Muslim refugee is drawing widespread condemnation from both Republicans and her fellow Democrats for comments deemed anti-Semitic, after she contended that a pro-Israel lobbying group in the United States is buying off lawmakers to support the Jewish state. Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, a Democrat who has represented a district in the Midwestern state of Minnesota for 5 weeks, claimed in a string of Twitter comments about this on Sunday. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Boaty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, February 12th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A Malawian presidential candidate is promising a 64% minimum wage increase if elected.
You know, in Malawi, there's a lot of opportunities that can be done to help revenue for the country. So it is within these revenues that you want to increase the wage from 25,000 to 40,000.
Axen Clyle is the National Publicity Secretary of the Opposition People's Party of former President Joyce Banda. Nigerian President Buhari holds a rally in Kwara State ahead of Saturday's presidential election. We'll talk with a young Chadian economist who is launching a political initiative. And Zambia's government rejects opposition accusations.
It is a threat and preposterous in the extreme that he can make such an unwarranted accusation. The president doesn't show people. He neither has the means nor the reasons to do so.
Amos Chanda is the spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. And why is the Liberian government issuing certificates to bachelors? Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Malawian President Joyce Banda, who is also the presidential candidate of the opposition People's Party, is promising a 64% minimum wage increase if she's elected in the country's May 21st poll. Currently, minimum wage in Malawi is about $2,109. Mrs. Banda says she will raise the minimum wage to about 40,000 Kwaja, a 64% increase. She said it is enough for Malawians to work for a whole month only to earn. It is not enough for Malawians to earn for a whole month only to earn $2,109. Axen Kalali is the National Publicity Secretary for former President Banda's People's Party. He says the former president also sees the minimum wage hike as a way to increase revenue.
The president for People's Party, Her Excellency Joyce Banda, since she submitted her nomination papers for 21 May election, she has been going around across the country mobilizing people to vote for her. So in most of her areas, she has told the people that once voted into power, she's going to do a number of issues. One of them is that the introduction of the universal fertilizer subsidy. And then she has talked about the minimum wage, which is now currently at 25,000. And she has said that once voted into power, she's going to raise that to about 40,000, which is close to 64%. So there's a number of issues that she has tackled, that are the proper issues that she has tackled that favors the vulnerable people.
So, Axel, the question is, the former president, she was president, and the minimum wage was that amount. Where is she going to get the money to raise the minimum wage?
You might be aware that at the time she took over the reins of power in 2012 to 2014, it was actually when Malawi was at standstill, everything almost collapsed in Malawi. So the time she took over power, she was about fixing the economy because the economy was in bad status at that particular time. So that 2 years was about laying foundation for the country. You know, in Malawi, there's a lot of opportunities that we can create in collecting tax and other things that can be done to help revenue for the country. So it is within these revenues that you want to increase the wage from 25,000 to 40,000.
What are the former president's chances? Because the fact that the alliance that she was supposed to form with Vice President Chilima did not materialize, what are the chances that she can win the election?
Actually, the alliance that you are talking about was relying on her because it is her ex-president, Dr. Joseph Banda, that has the grassroots support. You might be aware that just recently, some months ago, there was a survey which was conducted across the country. And she was rated one of the trustworthy leaders that Malawi can vote for. So since she came back from America, she has been conducting rallies across the country. And Malawians have voiced out that among the leaders that are contesting now, she's the only president that can be trusted because of her developments that she did during the time she was our president from 2012 to 2014. So people are saying it better, Dr. Joyce Banda, than anyone else. So she has got so many chances because she has been in touch with the grassroots. So possibly when the 14 elections want to favor her, without doubt.
Accent Klalis, the National Publicity Secretary of the Opposition People's Party of former Malawian President Joyce Banda. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lilongwe. Former U.S. President Bill Clinton has canceled his trip to Nigeria on the grounds that it could be politicized in the wake of that country's presidential election this Saturday. Mr. Clinton was one of the dignitaries invited to deliver goodwill messages at the signing of a national peace accord at the International Conference Center in Abuja tomorrow, Wednesday. Meanwhile, incumbent Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari held a campaign rally yesterday in a Kwara state capital of Ilori. VOA's Peter Clotty covering the Nigerian election. He spoke with voter Abubakar Galba in Ilori.
My name is Abubakar Galba from Kwara State, Ilori. Ilori is local government.
Now, so I see you have a shirt on Buharism. What does that mean?
Buharism means last blood of everybody here is Buhari. We are going for Buhari for second time. That's what it means.
Why are you going for him?
Because of what he has done. Look at the 4 years. He's been our president for the 4 years, and the country is changing from worse to better.
What improvement have you seen for the last four years?
So many improvements. So many improvements. We can see many improvements, especially in our state. We have not been like this before. We are enjoying Buhari government. Many improvements, like M-Power, our brothers and sisters, they have no work to do. Buhari invested M-Power on them, money, trader money, so many things. The country is changing.
But they said those schemes are meant to convince you to vote for him.
No. That is a total lie. Because me as a person, I am not a politician, but I follow Buhari because no, that is a total lie. The scheme is for every Nigerian, not for one party. If you are PDP, you can join them. I know many of PDP that is inside this M-Power program.
So now tell me, I hear Otoge. Who is it directed to? Or what is it directed to? And why Otoge? What does it mean?
Otoge means enough is enough. If you are doing good for people and they say Otoge, enough is enough. If you are doing bad thing for them, they say enough is enough. But our Otoge in Kwara State means the present government in Kwara State now, Governor Fatai Ahmed and the leader, Bukola Saraki, they are doing the bad things for the people of Kwara State. You can see a bad road, you can see economy, you can see tax, everywhere is not good for us.
But if you say that you can see bad roads and all that, a short while ago you were saying President Buhari has improved everything. Yes. So how do you reconcile the two?
That is why we are following President Buhari, because it's President Buhari that doing all the roads that you see in the Kwara State now. Look at Jeba Mokwa Road. Look at Erile Ilaudu to Osun Boundary. Every boundary of our state.
Well, I'm hearing here in Loring that some of you were brought up north, some from Lagos and other places, and that the crowd that I'm seeing is a borrowed crowd. They bust them here.
No. We are not a borrowed crowd. Voluntarily, we are here. Nobody give us any penny to come here. We bought this shirt for ourselves at the rate of 1,005.
Now, so those people who are yet to make up their mind on who to vote for in Saturday's election, what do you tell them?
I can only advise my colleagues, my friends, my sisters, my brothers to vote for Buhari on one condition: progress.
Nigerian voter Abubakar Galba was speaking with viewers Peter Clotty in the Kwara State capital of Ilori. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Tuesday, February 12th. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. Ivory Coast must address important and ongoing human rights abuses in the country, says a new report out this week from Amnesty International. Francois Patouel, a West Africa researcher for the organization, tells Reiki Shryak a crackdown on dissent, inhumane prison conditions, and impunity for crimes by authorities are three of the most pressing issues in the country.
Well, Côte d'Ivoire is projecting an image of relative stability. So the conclusion of the report we are launching today is that when you scratch the surface, the human rights situation remains fragile, and Côte d'Ivoire is still battling with its old demons. One of them is the repression of dissent, the crackdown on dissent. So to start with, on the crackdown on dissent, the country has very vague laws which include, you know, undermining public order or publishing false information or defamation. And these laws have been used against journalists, bloggers, and political activists. We've recorded at least 17 cases of detention of journalists and bloggers. The most recent one is a cyber activist called Carton Noir, who was arrested on the 8th of November 2018 for filming a video where he was commenting on the fact that police officers were actually racketing taxi drivers and drivers. He's been in detention since the 8th of November. He was subjected to torture and other ill treatments. He's at the prison of Abidjan. He's at the jail of Abidjan now, and he is very sick.
And this brings up another point, is that Amnesty has documented that 152 people have died in detention since 2014. Does that speak to not just abuse, but the prison conditions in general?
Yes, the prison conditions in Côte d'Ivoire are extremely worrying. There's been a chronic problem of overcrowding in particular. So based on the last figures we got in July 2018, there were around 16,000 detainees in Côte d'Ivoire. When the prison capacity, the capacity of the prison of over the 34 prisons is just above 8,000. So there's a 200% occupation rate in the prison. This is particularly bad in Abidjan, where there's about 6,000 detainees for a jail that has a capacity of just 1,500.
The acquittal of Gbagbo at the ICC recently, how do you think this affects, number one, the authorities' crackdown in general? Do they see themselves as more immune to any kind of prosecution afterwards? And number two, obviously, do you think this also coming up for the elections next year is going to cause some tension between Gbagbo's camp and Ouattara's camp?
The justice system in Côte d'Ivoire has been very unequal. It has gone, it has arrested and detained people from the pro-Gbagbo camp for years when people from the pro-Ouattara camp were still free. But now, with a new ordinance, the president has given an amnesty to even the pro-Gbagbo and the pro-Ouattara camp. So this is an extremely worrying ordinance. This means that the victims of these human rights abuses have not had their rights to justice upheld.
That was Francois Patuel, West Africa researcher for Amnesty International. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Abidjan. Chadian President Idriss Deby has been in power now since 1990, but dropping oil prices coupled with weak security environment has left Chad in poverty. In comes Success Mazra, a young Chadian economist who gave up a prestigious position with the African Development Bank in order to launch a political initiative called the Transformers. He wants to get all Chadians involved in socio-economic and political transformation of their country. Success Mazra spoke with me in our Washington studio about his plans.
Actually, I was a principal economist at the African Development Bank until April 2018. And I decided to resign from my position at the African Development Bank and to go back to my country, Chad, to launch a political movement named the Transformers. The objective is to bring all energies in the country, outside the country, people from the diaspora, young men, old men, women, men from people from the cities, from the rural areas. You know, it's about bringing all the positive energies of our country so that we can build a better nation, where we can transform our country into a land of opportunity for all its citizens. So this is the ambition and this is the vision. So I had to go back, and I decided to go back because in April, the current president, who is there for now 29 years, decided to make a strong amendment on the constitution to establish what he called full presidential regime, which basically means no vice presidency, no prime minister, and even, you know, everything regarding parliament and so on is in his hand, actually.
So this movement is a political party that
it's
you want
political,
to start?
Absolutely.
A political movement?
A political movement in the process of becoming a political party, actually. You know, so we did everything and expecting this to come on board in the coming days, actually. But people are joining in number across the country.
People are enthusiastic about it.
Very enthusiastic, actually. And young people, you know, people like me, we want development. You know, this is a country where people should know that only 3% of the population of Chad has access to electricity, which is the lowest access to electricity in the world. I'm telling you, in the world. And look at the rankings, international rankings, in terms of competitiveness. We are ranked 140 out of 140 by the Economic Forum, which means we are the least. In terms of human development index by the World Bank, we are ranked on the bottom, actually. But we have oil, we have gold, we have natural resources, we have arable land. So what is missing there? Leadership. You know, servant leadership. So the idea of the Transformers is not just to come and look backward. It's to look forward and to build a better nation through servant leadership.
How acceptable do you think President Idris Deby will be to your idea of forming a political movement or a political party?
What is the most important is that people want this to happen. What people want is the development, that the life should be transformed, that they can have access to education, to health system, to electricity, to clean water. 80% of N'Djamena, the capital city, don't have access to clean water. Can you imagine? With a country, we exploited oil for more than 15 years now. A lot of natural resources. This is not acceptable unless they don't want the country to be really developed. So my question is not only about who is going in the current leadership system is going to accept the idea, but my only question is that the population of Chad, do they really want this to happen? Yes. I can see that all of them want a land of opportunity, no matter where they come from.
Success Masra is a young Chadian economist who has launched a political initiative called The Transformers. He spoke with me in our Washington studio. A spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu has described as preposterous and unwarranted accusations by opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema that President Lungu tried to assassinate him last weekend. Hichilema made the accusations after a political rally he hosted by him turned violent. He says police fired live ammunition at the meeting, which he was addressing last Friday, in an apparent attempt to kill him. Amos Chanda is the spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu.
It is absurd and preposterous in the extreme that he can make such an unwarranted accusation. The president doesn't kill people. He neither has the means nor the reasons to do so. It's completely false. It is the opposition strategy all the time. They think that whenever they want to make a point, they have to go into the international media space and against the country. They attract negative sentiment, hoping that the negative sentiment will result in Kwacha because we are on the international market. And when those things begin to happen, the Kwacha begins to depreciate, they celebrate. So we have gotten used to those strategies. Of course, you can never get used to that. When I say this, I'm just saying we know exactly what they're up to. And every falsehood that they tell, they will be respectful to tell our side of the story. We are here telling our side of the story that it is extremely absurd, totally untrue, and there's no such a thing.
But Amos, did what Mr. Hichilema is saying, that the police and the ruling party activists opened fire during his rally last Friday, did that happen?
Who opened fire, the police or the ruling party or the opposition UPND? What we have on record is that shops belonging to members of the ruling party were torched, looted, and individuals that you can go and see in hospital who are members of the ruling party were knifed and beaten by supporters of the opposition. So when a riot in town occurs, you respect the police using all the instruments available to it to exert pressure on the rioters crowd and bring the rioters under control. Yes, the police used tear gas canisters to disperse the mob that was rioting in town. Secondly, to disperse the mob that deliberately, consciously blockaded the route that the president was to use, posing danger to the life of the president. Police who act, they have a standard operating procedure. It doesn't matter who. The police who used enemies, if, I don't know whether he was there. If Mr. Hichilema was in the rioters' mob that attempted to blockade the mob again, that is a matter between him and the police.
Amos Chanda is the spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. The Liberian government says it has begun the process of reinforcing the issuance of certificates to bachelors and spinsters to properly identify their status in society. The Liberian National Document and Records Agency says any single person without a bachelor's certificate will not be allowed to get married. But as Moses Gazier will report from Monrovia, the regulation has generated a debate in the country.
We started this since the establishment of the National Archives in 1977, November 14, and it's by law we're doing this.
That was Kapi Niri, Director of Communications at the Center for National Documents and Records Agency, explaining the legality of issuing certificates to singles in Liberia. Niri says the regulations are embedded in the act that created the National Archives in 1977. The single certificates, according to Niri, is the mere requirement now in obtaining a marriage certificate. The law itself has been dormant since the agency was founded 40 years ago, but there are reasons why it is coming into force, according to Niri.
This is a prerequisite now to obtaining a marriage certificate in Liberia. And there are so many reasons why we decided to do it. People are married and they will not go to the court to divorce, but instead want to remarry with all that process. So basically, we decided to curtail that. We found out that too many people were coming to us complaining about this situation, even disturbing wedding ceremonies.
It takes only $15 now to acquire a single status certificate, but Niri says the price was originally at $150. Last week, most Liberians criticized the process even though they were ignorant to the law. But Niri took the argument further by stating that the process was not unique to Liberia alone.
This is not just something we're doing. It's something that is done in other countries. Even in America, in Canada, in other European countries, they have it. It also helps you to prove your case in case a man or a woman complains that you took their husband from them.
Anli Tube works as head of the Department of Customer Service at the National Documents and Records Agency.
Well, the bachelor who certificate is that maybe the young boys telling the girls out there that they are single and they are not married. Based on that, if you come in contact with somebody, you assure them that you are not attached, and then they feel impressed. They sell are also security for them that say I'm secure, I can find my partner out there and she will have that trust in me.
This new measure is legal by the act that created the Center for National Documents and Record Agency, but it appears comical in a semi-sophisticated society like Liberia. So I took the debate to the streets in the capital.
I got married last year, December 2nd. During the process of my wedding document, the body sent issue to us. I'm aware, and I paid $30.
If they are enforcing it, we have to be in compliance. Remember that it's the responsibility of the government to raise revenue for the country.
In 2018, when President George Weah addressed the joint session of the legislature, he said he will use the constitution and the laws of the country to run the affairs of his government. It is not clear whether the single status certificate is one of the laws the president was referring to. Moses Gazil, VOA News, Monrovia.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of African news. Former Malawian President Joyce Banda, who is also the presidential candidate of the opposition People's Party, is promising a 64% minimum wage increase if she's elected the country's president in the May 21st election. Currently, minimum wage in Malawi is about 25,000 Kwacha, about $2,109. Mrs. Banda says she will raise the minimum wage by 64%. A spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu has described as preposterous and unwarranted accusation that the president tried to kill opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema. And that is it for this Tuesday, February 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a good day.
Hello, peepsters. Welcome to the weekend. I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Boy, do I have a show for you. 55 minutes of cool, commercial-free, pan-African music. Hear your favorite current Afro beats. Discover new music from Ghana and meet Blinky Bill from Nairobi. He's just released a new album.
Even if you know a lot of things, there's no guarantee that you're gonna see it tomorrow.
Revel in earthy African classics from Mali, Cape Verde, DRC, and South Africa. So that, all this and more this Sunday at 15:05 and 20:05 UTC. Just tune in to your local FM station and meet me there. Music Time in Africa.